$1 billion in new renewable solar and wind generation, grid-scale batteries and establishment of a biomass supply. But it says it needs to maintain an operating stockpile of solid fuel at Huntly Power Station of around 350,000 tonnes, or about 670 gigawatts of electricity, enough for its own operations. However, as we said earlier, it won't be holding any extra for anyone else without payment. RNZ's business editor, Giles Beckford, good morning.
Good morning to you, Catherine.
GWH, is that gigawatts?
Yes, gigawatt hours.
Gigawatt hours, thanks very much. Right, just explain a bit more about what Genesis is doing and why, Giles.
Very simply, it says in order to maintain security of supply through this winter and into next winter and the winter after that, we need to have reliable base supply energy that can be plugged in. That is provided largely by the Huntly Power Station, and that is coal and gas fired. So they're looking for fuel for it, looking around, and they say, gosh, the gas is a bit on the low side. The supply's there down about a third on where they were a year ago. And that really leaves them with little alternative but to say, well, we've got to use coal.
So importing coal. And importing coal in anticipation of a dry year and run of dry years. What's it saying with respect to only buying enough for itself unless other companies pay up?
Well, in past years, it's just bought in what it thinks is going to be needed for everybody, what the system will need. Obviously, the cost of that has been reflected in prices somewhere along the chain. But it's saying we've actually been taking a bit of financial cost, which has been impinging on, for instance, what we pay back to our shareholders. And we don't see why we should actually be taking all the responsibility. So from here on in, from next year, or from the end of this year, we've calculated that we need 350,000 tonnes of coal or biomass. And these are the little specialised wooden pellets that can replace coal. But whatever the mix is, they'll need 350,000 tonnes of it. We've currently got 500,000 tonnes as of Monday. They'll be chewing through that during cold spells, for instance, to keep the Huntly station going. So they then need to replenish that stockpile, and they're saying to the rest of the electricity retailers, if you want to ensure yourself that there are power supplies that you can access from thermal generation, from coal, then you're going to have to cut a deal with us and you're going to have to bear the cost
of
the coal.
How's it doing that? Is it effectively introducing hedging contracts of some sort?
It's a sort of, they're going to call, they call it, I think, the Genesis swapation or something like that. Something fancy which people in the trade will understand and recognise instantly. But yes, it's a hedging contract.
Okay. Why does Genesis import coal, remind us, when there is domestic supply? What happens to coal mined in New Zealand?
We've got a variety of coal resources here. On the West Coast, it's largely coking coal. Now, that's the one that attracts the high prices, especially from overseas steel makers. And so that's what gets freighted across to Lyttelton and sent to India and Japan in particular. There's really dirty lignite coal down in Southland, which has been used for domestic and a variety of industrial uses. And then the rest of it is, there's essentially a resource in the middle of the North Island in Waikato around Huntly and the like. Now, one condition of Genesis's resource consent is that any coal that it burns must be low sulfur and low ash. And it says that principally the supplies coming out of Waikato are not sufficient for it to be totally domestic resourced. The other thing is that local mining operations can't quickly turn on and off production because Genesis rings up and says, we need a few thousand tons of your best coal by next week, please. So they turn to Indonesia, where it's readily available, it's reasonably cheap, it's easily accessible, and they allow for reasonable short-term supply. So, you know, Genesis will order now and it will arrive in July, August.
What has the Minister of Energy and Resources said about this situation this morning, and particularly with respect to importing coal?
Well, Shane Jones, people will have realised now, has become an enthusiastic supporter of using New Zealand resources and opening up energy resources in particular. His current catchphrase is coal, not dole. A few weeks ago, he announced an intention that the government will amend the Resource Management Act so that it will make it easier for coal operations to get underway. It will basically relax some of the restrictions that were imposed on them by the Labour government. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that coal will just automatically flow. The law's got to be changed yet. We'll wait and see what comes in. That is separate to the Genesis specific resource consent about their emissions and their ash.
All right, so it's not about a resource consent for mining. It is to do with what particular coal could be used, or just explain again.
The Genesis consent, specifies sulfur and ash emission levels, right? So you've then got to match those levels to the coal that's available, right? It's mostly available from Indonesia. Some of it's available from New Zealand. Genesis wants security of supply. What Shane Jones is talking about is essentially getting coal mining up and running, allowing it to expand more easily and taking off some of the restrictions. Now, that will take some time to occur.
Of course, the burning of coal as a backup is controversial and a kind of a poke in the eye to efforts to lower emissions. At the moment, it's the only one of the few options we have for backup. Genesis also pointing out its investment in biomass. How viable is it as an alternative in the foreseeable?
They did trials last year, which they brought in stuff from the States. It worked well. It gives them the same sort of heat output that they need in the furnace. They're arranging further import supplies, Malcolm Johns from Genesis tells me yesterday. They're looking for local sources of it. Now, a few weeks ago, we had a company called Forrester, which is an Australian listed company, saying it was planning to spend, in the near term, at least $100 million setting up a plant at Kawerau to be able to make this these special pellets from local slash and forestry waste. So that's a good thing for them. They have ambitions to do it down in the South Island as well. So, a source of local supply is coming, but it's probably 2 to 3 years away.
All right. That security product we were trying to find the name for earlier will be called the Huntley Firming Options. That sounds like a diet clinic.
It just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? It rolls off the coal mine.
Now, gas, this is the other point. We had interviews recently on 9 to Noon, industry saying that gas supplies are running down faster than anticipated, right?
Yep.
And what else,
we've had, in the end, there's been no serious exploration for gas. And I mean serious as in let's get big rigs out there drilling holes, doing seismic work and all the rest of it. There was one a few years ago, but really, in the past decade, exploration just petered away. It was largely because companies were spending large amounts of money drilling dry holes. There are other places in the world where it was better to go and chase the resources that they wanted at cheaper price. So New Zealand has always been down the pecking order of the global exploration industry, but if the permits have been there and the incentives have been available to assist, then they've occasionally had a go. Taranaki Basin, onshore Taranaki, they're the only proven resource that we have, notwithstanding whatever we talk about on the East Coast and the Great South.
And it's under a decade now, the anticipated supply, right?
Yeah, there is. They're basically saying that most of it is consumed by Methanex and then by Genesis. Domestic consumption only accounts for about 10%.
Okay. Just one final point. What should we take from what we're seeing here about the risks of a very dry year and the risks of needing to burn coal this year? Are there any implications for Transpower with what is shaping up?
Well, I think that there is. I put the question to Malcolm Johns yesterday saying, is this an issue that Transpower as the grid operator and the Electricity Authority as the sector regulator, that they actually need to be taking the initiative here and taking the lead in sort of an all-of-industry approach to the issue. And he basically just battered it back to me and say, it's not for us to say that that's the case. But clearly, if the lights go out Then once again, Transpower will be under scrutiny for as it was a couple of years ago for the way it manages the grid. And the power companies will be under scrutiny for the way that they held their resources and their generation, perhaps in anticipation of higher prices, or whether they were just waiting for the phone call from Transpower. So some would think that there is a certain logic there. I mean, Malcolm Johns is essentially saying, we've got one solution. It's a temporary market-led solution. Come and buy these insurance hedges, right? And that will get us through. But you have to say that we need perhaps a more coordinated approach to the issue.
Very good. Thank you, Giles Beckford, as RNZ's business editor. 19 and a half minutes to 10. You're listening to 9 to Noon with Catherine Ryan on RNZ National. The man wanted over a central Auckland fatal shooting has been found dead in the Taupo area. A massive manhunt's been underway for 31-year-old Hune K. Selwyn since the killing on Ponsonby Road on Sunday night. RNZ's been reporting its understanding that he's now deceased. Maya Ingo has been following the case, and the police have just released more information. Kia ora, Maya. What have police just said to you this last few minutes?
Kia ora, Catherine. Well, just before Detective Inspector Chris Barry spoke to media outside the Auckland City Police Hub, and he confirmed that Hone K. Selwyn, the man wanted for this shooting in Ponsonby Road, has been found dead. Police believe that he died yesterday, and his body was found yesterday at a rural address in Broadlands area, which is about half an hour out of Taupo. Police were on their way to Taupo. They knew that the offender was on his way to Taupo at the time when they got the call that a body had been found in the area, and they've confirmed with the family that it is Hone K. Selwyn.
Any other information about the circumstances of his death available, Maya?
Police at this stage are treating the death as unexplained. They say that Auckland Police are going to be working with Bay of Plenty inspectors on this case. But at this stage, police wouldn't give any other info around the nature of his death.
Did they reveal who found him?
He was found by an associate, police said, at that Borland's rural address.
Did he have any known links to that particular address, did the police reveal?
No, he didn't. But what I can tell you is that police have confirmed that the offender was a member of the Killer Bees gang.
All right. Has the name of the victim been released yet with respect to the offence he was accused of?
Police still are unable to name the victim, but Inspector Barry said that they are expecting to release more details about the victim later today. They've been in communications with the family and offering support to the victim's family, who he said was understandably devastated.
And any more information about the victim and the gunman, whether they had any knowledge of each other, has anything else been revealed around the circumstances or not?
Inspector Barry confirmed that at this stage they don't believe that the victim and the offender knew each other at all. And she said that the victim and his group of four associates that he was with walking down the street did not have any criminal connections of any kind. So at this stage, it does look like a random attack.
And just finally, is there anything else police have revealed about Hone K. Selwyn's background? As you said, they've confirmed he was a member or had association with the Killer Bees, but anything else revealed?
Police weren't able to confirm anything else other than that he was a member of the Killer Bees gang. He had criminal associations through there. We don't know the exact nature of his activities or what he was doing on Ponsonby Road that night.
Thank you so much. That's Maya Ingo, RNZ reporter, just with the latest on that story.